everybody. This is Tanya Schultz. I'm actually doing my Friday tourist based stream. And this week, I am doing a book chat with my good friend and also author and fitness coach, Tom Furman. And let me give you a little bio about Tom before we start. And I already tweeted all this out already, but just for my recording, I want to go ahead and read it to you guys. So Tom Furman has been involved in martial arts and conditioning since 1972. With an early background in wrestling and a student of the methods of the York Barbell Club, Tom immediately separated fact from fiction growing up outside of Pittsburgh. 11 members of his family were combat veterans, the most famous one being Uncle Charlie, Charles Bronson. His down-to-earth training methods are derived from his decades-long practice of martial arts and his study of exercise science. Oh, I'm going to mute you. Mute your mic. Well, the application of force improvement of movement and durability rank high on his list of priorities when training. He gives credit of hundreds of hours of seminars, training sessions, and backyard workouts, including training time with many martial arts legends. He also credits his incredible gifted training partners who came from varied backgrounds such as exercise psychologists, airborne rangers, bounty hunters, boxing trainers, and Coast Guard rescue divers. His best-selling ebook, Armor of War, is available at tomfurman.com. His Guide to Mobility, Bamboo Gods, Iron Men, and Rubber Bands is available on Amazon. And today we'll be chatting about his new book, ebook, Seasons of Temper. Hey, Tom, how are you? Welcome to Twitter Space. Tom, can you?
Tom,
you got to unmute yourself. We're all good friends here, so we're actually having a lot of fun with this. So let's see. Tom, you're muted. Let me see if I can unmute you. No, I can't unmute you. You're gonna have to unmute yourself, Tom.
I'm assuming Tom is new to this as I am.
Yeah, this is his first time. I think he popped in, but I don't think he's ever spoken in one. So you just have to hit the microphone on the bottom left corner.
I had to go into permissions on my phone.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Tom.
You may have to go into permissions and give Twitter permission to start to use the mic. I had to.
Yeah, it won't work, but then it wouldn't let you become a co-host or a host with that in mind.
Yeah.
And I have a whole list of questions. Let me text him and see where he's at.
I can pretend to be Tom.
I'm going to have you come on next. We're going to talk about your new project. Unmute your mic. Your mic.
Yeah, so I won't be able to hang out too long because I got to take the dogs out shortly, and they're already making whining noises in the background. So,
it's Friday the 13th. And he told me, I go, should we be doing a space on Friday the 13th? He's like, no, we'll be fine.
I forgot it was Friday the 13th.
But. So, Tom, if you want, you can unmute yourself or go in to your settings just to make sure that your microphone is enabled, and then we can go from there. And right now, I'm actually recording all this so that I can make this into a podcast. And we also have a Tom on here. Is that you? Is this your fake account, Tom? Whose account is this? Oh. Tom Girth, 1951. So while we're waiting for Tom, our co-host, to pop open, I don't know what happened here. It's so crazy.
I asked for his permission.
No, he should be able to be using his microphone because he wouldn't be able to become a co-host. Well, Alice Bell, Tom, you can leave the space and come back. Let me say hi to my good friend Ahmad. How are you?
Is that working now?
Yes.
Is that working now?
Yay!
Finally. Weird. I don't know. The different. I finally put it on the phone. I had it on my computer and it wouldn't unmute. So, okay.
Oh, yeah. I'm good. It doesn't work on desktop. You can listen live on desktop, but yes. You can't not be part of the conversation on desktop.
Okay. We're good now then. Okay.
So how are you?
I'm doing well. Other than a little frantic mess with technology, I'm doing okay.
So I want to give you guys a quick disclaimer. Tom and I are good, like really close friends. We just declined co-host. Where'd he go? Okay, he was here. Okay, now we're going to have to, Tom, I'm going to have to bring you back up as my as a co-host. There we go. You were here. Now let's see if you can, all right, Tom, go ahead and either request a mic because I want to ask some questions. There he is. He is now the co-host. There we go. So quick disclaimer, everyone. Tom and I are good friends. He's been with me. We've been friends for so long. He was one of the first people that, you know, when I started live streaming in 2010, Tom was one of my guests. Some of my guests, he brought me guests to do my show with. So so Tom has been besides a good friend, he's also been one of my number one supporter in my time as a live streamer. How are you, Tom?
We'll get it.
There we go. Hi, Dr. J. She's actually an author. She's fantastic. I'm glad she's here too. How are you? I'm gonna invite you up and chat with us. We're just trying to get our my BFF here, Tom Furman.
Yeah.
There you go.
Can you hear me now?
Yes, I can hear you now. Oh, perfect.
It's weird. No, what I was saying is my demographic is more mature gentlemen, shall we say. Although I train women and men, and I've trained down to teenagers and all the way up to 70-year-olds. But what I'm writing currently, my demographic, my sweet spot for writing is men from, say, 40 till death. And that seems to be working. So even though, and oddly before this, about 40 minutes ago, I was dealing with a female tennis player who's in her 60s. So the type of thing I do, or the writing that I do, is applicable to a broad variety of people. But my audience, I am kind of aware of whom I write to and who responds to what I write.
Nice. Okay. Done. I don't know why I had a book thing going on and they're describing it. So, but when did you decide to start writing? That's what I wanted to know. When did you decide to start writing?
Oh, I was writing when I was in grade school. You'd write stories, and I could write stories. It was enjoyable, and sometimes they were okay. And people, you get a little feedback from that, and I suppose that strokes your ego or encourages you to continue that. So creative writing was pretty easy for me, writing for a school newspaper. But I wasn't like pounding out the stuff. I went years without any writing anything other than training journals. And then I got a computer, got a Mac, and I wrote letters to the editor of things like Black Belt Magazine and Pitbull Gazette, two popular publications. And they were getting published. And I thought, oh, this is kind of cool. Look, I'm in print, which at that time is rather significant. And so I started writing. Dragon Door Publications came out in around 2000 with Pavel Satsaline, who kind of brought the idea of using kettlebells to America. And to build their page, they produced a lot of product, a lot of writing. So if you bought things, they encourage you to write articles. So you say, oh, I tried doing this yesterday. It was a joke now. It's like, write an article, comrade. So we all wrote articles. And so there's this massive amount. And I was writing them and communicating back and forth. And it was nice being published. And writing to clients and so forth online and things like that. And just posting on social media, it becomes very fluid, relaxed process. So I like writing articles and ebooks and that sort of thing and publish it. I published one on Amazon, which is kind of a pain in the neck. And it's the one thing that comes easily for me. Everything else is really hard. But writing is kind of easy. And the more you write, the better you get. And the more feedback you get from professionals and so forth who tell you, hey, this is good or it's not good and so forth. So that's kind of my history of writing.
When I look at some of your books, your ebooks, I think of like, do you write primarily for men?
Yeah. That's my demographic. I've done articles with you for women, and you know, you get three views. I get With men, I get 100 views. You know, that's the difference. And I'm writing more towards them. It speaks towards them. The references I use a lot of obscure references from movies and books and people very popular with that age group. And it's something familiar to them. It's something they can grasp onto. The technology for women and men is very similar in training. There's hormonal differences, obviously, size differences and things like that. And the same training methods. I think, in fact, women are kind of robbed when they push a woman's only workout or something like that, because a lot of times it's not that good. If they simply train like men, they're not going to look like men. Hormones will prevent that. But writing for men is just very easy, and they kind of they're kind of in on the joke. And I kind of keep things lighthearted, entertain, motivate, and inform when I write.
So I was like, and I remember when you published your Armor of War. I mean, and then I think the one I like is the Iron Man and Rubber Bands, which, you know, because mobility is always a key thing for myself, especially working in technology and sitting at the computer or holding my phone for so long. But your new book called Seasons of Temper, can you tell us a little bit about that? I didn't even get a chance to really, be honest with you, I didn't really get a chance to really delve into that yet.
Yeah, well, I have been publishing articles on Medium for a long time. There's a paper there. And chapters. They all kind of feed one way about de-aging oneself, staying strong, staying basically bulletproof or durable. And it's very directed, like I said, at men. And so Seasons of Temper was just, it popped into my head, literally, that tempering process with metals making it tougher. Seasons are changes or a period of time. So it's a period of time where you make yourself stronger, harder, and lasting the distance. And most of the articles are geared around that, and they're very simple. Most of them involve home training in a corner of your garage or family room or even outdoors in the park. And I try to keep that as a limiting factor. I never tell people, say, to go use some exotic piece of equipment or something they don't have access to. Rather, I want them to be able to train and have the mentality that wherever they are, they can get in better shape and get stronger.
Yeah, so let me ask you one more thing. So what are some of the tips that you tell your guys? I mean, I think you mentioned a couple of tips, but how can men resist aging? Since we're going to this is going to be mostly about men and their aging process. I thought I unmuted, but I didn't unmute. So I think you gave us a couple of tips as far as helping men resist aging, but can you tell us some more other ones that you have talked about? I'm kind of curious about that.
You hit on a very, very good one. And the main thing is staying mobile. You have to move every day. And people sit a lot now. And somebody recently did a study that showed primitive man moved to hunt, but he kind of conserved energy otherwise. And moving every day is the first one. What does that do? It maintains bone density. It maintains muscular bounce, and it maintains mobility. You move through a range of motion. When you lock yourself in one range of motion, your body adapts. Wolf's Law, you adapt to that. So if you're sitting all the time, and then someone said, well, let's come out and do some deep squats, probably isn't going to happen. So deep squatting is something you should do rather frequently. Same thing with as you age, no one thinks of climbing. It's shocking the amount of men who can't do pull-ups at any age. So that's a power-to-weight ratio, too. You can outgrow that. You can outgain weight and become so heavy it's almost impossible to pull yourself up. The other thing is, along those lines of moving and climbing or crawling or running and running in bursts. One doesn't have to run a lot if it's not in the mix for you. You don't need to run. There are other cardiovascular systems of training. But just being able to move over land, hiking, a lot of my friends hike with backpacks, carrying weight around, putting a little bit extra load, not a big load, but a little extra load, rucking, we call it. And that type of motion is very, very de-aging. So what all these things do, they maintain lean body mass on a man's body. Lean body mass decreases with the aging process hormonally, and you move less. When you're 22 years old, you'll skip lunch to play touch football. When you're 44 years old, you may skip a game of racquetball for a 3-martini lunch. Your priorities change. So one thing you really want to focus on as you age is maintaining lean body mass. It'll help your immune system. It will essentially keep you young. That bag of skin you're in won't be sagging like a sharp hay. Also, your ability to do work or fear doing work, like, oh, I have to get up on a roof and look at how the roof's doing in the storm. You can climb a ladder. You're not fearful of climbing a ladder. You're not fearful of lifting things out of the back of a car. You're not fearful of changing a tire. You're not fearful of playing catch or throwing a football with your children or friends. So it eliminates a lot of fear. And when you start avoiding things, you even age further. So those types of tips, basically, that's the physical end. The dietary end is consuming enough protein, consuming low enough calories to maintain body weight, consuming adequate vegetables. Those are pretty simple. If you're over fat, you're eating too many calories and not moving enough. Most of the equation comes from the dietary side, not from the exercise side. It's very hard to outrun a donut. It's not a winning process to think you're going to eat a bag of candy and go work it off. It doesn't work that way. The numbers just don't add up. And losing body fat is really about math. So those are very simple things. Movement, increasing lean body mass, moving, getting your heartbeat up for 20 to 30 minutes several times a week. Those things alone are so simple and so are easily embraced with a minimal amount of equipment. There's no reason anyone should not be doing them.
Thank you, Dr. J. Dr. J, did you want to come up or did you have to get going? I think she had to leave. So, and Deb, if you want to pop in, let me know. I'll invite you up to speak. So let me ask you something. I have seen so many of the, like, you know, we're friends on Facebook. You've shown some before and after. You've done incredible job on a lot of your clients. And I'm kind of curious, like, how do you train people by email and Zoom? I mean, like, especially last year during COVID time, how was that for you?
It's dramatically easy. In fact, I rarely use Zoom. Last time I Zoomed, someone was in England, and I was talking to someone interested in training. I gave him a consultation, and I'd say it's 99.9% by email, and people make out their own taxes. That's way more complex than training is. So we have YouTube and thousands of exercise examples. And the idea is, it's just like you're being a chef and you ask people what they like to eat, what their needs are. And you look at their lifestyle, you look at the equipment they have, you look at their age group, look at their goals, look at their injuries and health, look at their body weight, you know, percentage of body fat and stuff, and organize the process of getting them in better shape. They do better through email than they do in person. Now, I'm not talking
why
about...
Why is that?
Because I send out a couple newsletters a week. I have Tuesday check-in, but actually everyone checks in Monday. They check in Monday. They tell me their weight. Men tell me their waistline. Women tell me their umbilical measurement, their hip measurement. Then they tell me about how the workouts went that week, what they ate that week. Then I source it out if we have to change anything, offer some distinctions in behavior, alter their programs. I do it, then they do what I say. If you do what I say, I'll produce miracles. If you don't do what I say, good luck with that.
Oh, wow. Okay.
It's, It's very easy. You know, I'm not hard on people. I mean, I play with a group of guys that I write to about hardcore things and so forth, and I do joke about that a lot. But when people say, oh, I don't want you training me, I'm scared you'd hurt me. If any trainer's hurting someone, why would they be hired? You lose your business. It's ridiculous.
That's a common statement, right? I think, did I ever say that to you too?
Oh, sure you did. I had someone else say it. They say, oh, yeah, I'm afraid you're going to kill me. I'm like, well, thanks a lot. There goes my business. You're a realtor. I'm going to take you. You're saying you're taking all the escrow money and running through Cayman Islands or something. You know, how'd that work out? It's you don't hurt people. You almost say to the doctor, oh, this doctor kills people. I think I'll go to him. So
oh my God.
That's inappropriate. You should never, there's a gradient for everyone, even athletes. And athletes can be injured. Athletes can push themselves too hard. And there are things that could be, you could overtrain them. Although overtraining for the average person's pretty hard to do. True overtraining. I'm not saying don't get tired or sore, but true overtraining, the average person probably can't push themselves that hard. That's a very motivated, young, hormonally strong person that does that. But through emails, ideal, because everything's on paper. And the people who do best are IT guys. Because IT guys respect the numbers. And they lay it out, look at it in front of them, see what they have to do, look at the numbers change every week, and magic happens. So that's pretty straightforward. And I know this doesn't work for a lot of people. They have to have someone there. They have to be taught how to exercise. And my program is basically for people who do know how to exercise. The videos are 70-80% of learning a lot of things, but certain skills certainly have to be learned in person. But a lot of people are just inundated with information, classes, trainers, gyms, and so forth. They're familiar with most everything, but how to put it together, it's as much art as it is science.
Oh, okay. And let me ask you something. Another one is, what is the most irritating thing about the health and fitness business? I mean, you've been doing this for a while now. What's the most irritating thing?
The most irritating thing, let's see, just, oh boy, that's a good point. There's just a lot of false information. There's false information, and then there's the whole idea of the organic granola, that whole genre of people, natural healing, natural, the word natural, I just find that repulsive. That sort of thing. People think that they don't have to exercise, they just have to take supplements. People who just exercise and neglect nutrition, people who just follow nutrition and don't exercise. There's a real big lack of science as we see going on planet Earth right now. There's a real lack of science involved in how people make decisions, and they make it more on beliefs rather than science or evidence. And people even write evidence-based fitness. There's companies called that and so forth, and I understand. But I'd say people don't understand the concept of evidence versus anecdotes, and that's probably the biggest thing that bothers me to no end. Men are pretty good about it. I'm just saying it's just the difference between sexes. Men are pretty good about they play sports. They've been humbled. They've been victorious. They know what it felt like to feel like in great shape. And I'm just saying, women will tend to be towards beliefs and will my friend do this and look how she looks, which is complete BS. I'd say that's the difference. Not all women, but I'm saying a lot. I've run into that more with women than I have with men. So those are the things that irritate me.
So what advice do you have for women then, as far as to stay fit?
Oh, that's easy. In fact, it's like if you take a world champion tennis player right now and we go in, we get five more coaches and we get them in there and a trainer, they're only going to improve 1-2%. But if we get you in Chi-Chi tennis, you're going to improve 10% a week, like incredibly well. So if we get women and we give them a proper nutrition and proper exercise, they will improve so quickly. It's rather dramatic because they have an access that specific hard training and proper nutrition. Women are grossly under-consuming protein, grossly.
It's insane. I've watched it. They grossly underconsume protein. They don't do enough strength training. That would be number one. They do a lot of aerobics, which isn't bad. It's not going to really hurt them one way or another, but they don't strength train and they don't eat enough protein. And they go in the sun too much. And last thing is they don't I would say that they don't recognize about certain types of calories in their diet. People ignore what calories are. They just don't recognize them going into their body. Like snacking and like liquid calories, like alcohol and so forth. I've had people actually tell me they didn't think there were any calories in wine. So
that's so boca.
Yeah, it is. I've had that. I said, well, the wine you're drinking, and they said, oh, this goes right through you. And I'm like, okay, you work down the street down here, big shop physician. You don't know what wine has calories. I mean, where's our school system failing? And
A lot of people, they think white wine is not fattening at all. Like,
yeah, well, it's cow. I mean, if all you did was drink wine, you probably wouldn't get fat. You get drunk. But it's 600 calories a bottle. There are four glasses in a bottle, which I didn't know till like 2010. I asked the bartender, how many glasses? I'm thinking eight. Yeah. So there's four glasses in a bottle. I'm like, really? Okay. So it's 150 calories a glass, four glasses, 600 calories a bottle. People sitting around, oh, we had a bottle of wine. Oh, every night we relax and have a bottle of wine. Yeah. Well, guess where the extra calories are coming from?
So we have a...
They don't recognize that, and they don't just recognize putting things in their mouth and source of fats or eating out. Why does food in restaurants taste good? There's more butter, there's more salt, there's more fats involved. That gives it the restaurant sheen that makes it taste better. It makes it more appealing. Plus the atmosphere you're in, it just seems to taste better. If you're eating out all the time and you don't severely limit, you can enjoy anything. I do. I go to restaurants all the time. But you enjoy and make a limit out of how much you're eating. And it gets down to that. The amount of calories you consume will determine your body weight. The breakdown of macronutrients are more telling in terms of your body composition. The difference between a 20-year-old person and a 60-year-old person, if they weighed the same, is a 60-year-old person has less muscle mass on their body. So they used to joke that, oh, I weigh the same, but everything's in a different place, and all the comedians on network TV would get a great laugh out of it. But they're just morbidly under-muscled, and that's reversible to a degree. It's not... Unless you're really jacking up the hormones, it's reversible and you get stronger and improve beyond your wildest dreams. But you won't become a Marvel superhero.
Larry, wow, okay. I have my good friend Debbie Erickson on with us. She's actually doing some rehab on her Deb.
You're terrible. Yeah, I'm listening to this. Man, and I'm like, oh God. And I haven't got out of my chair all freaking morning because I've been on the computer.
I did ice
my torn meniscus, and then usually when I do my rehab, it's in the evening when I finally got it out of the chair.
and the thing is, and I've had people with knee issues like that, that's medical intervention, understanding what you're doing and so forth, and dealing with even athletes, a lot of power lifters, they'll hit a peak and they'll start declining. When you ask them what their personal record or PRs are for a lift, they'll go, okay, my deadlift was 650. I said, well, hold on a second, when's the last time you hit 650 in a deadlift? Well, 2010. What are you deadlifting now? Ooh, 375. My back's kind of hurting me. And what happens is they keep the weight. So if they were 250 pounds or 250, there might be less weight, but there's less strength. they've kept the weight, and they really need to focus. It's a very hard thing for guys that size, because it's there's some ego based around being big and strong, is dropping their weight down and altering their training towards, say, more biking, hiking, swimming, elliptical, rowing machines, and still lift, but realizing their PRs, their peaks, are past. And you can train all of your life, but you're perhaps a competitive athlete part of your life. And that's a narrow window. It's narrower for some than others. And the best thing for, like, knee injuries, other than getting the legs super strong again, is getting as lean as possible.
Yeah, that might not happen, but, I mean, I'm not terrible, but, I mean, I'm also at an age where it's a little harder to, I mean, I eat properly, I eat balanced, I eat a lot of fruits and vegetables, especially fresh. I only usually eat fresh, so I do eat some protein, and then, but given the... It's just, I've got raging arthritis through my body too, so that's not helping any. So, but yeah, I'm going to sports therapy clinic, and I've been doing rehab exercises, feels like my whole life. So,
yeah, it's there's a joke when you get to a certain age and you're training, if you only have one pain, but just moves around the body.
I've been
in martial arts all my life, and there's like a picture of a guy, he said he's covered in ice, and you just see his nose outside of the ice, and so the doctor said ice down everything that hurts.
Yeah, pretty much. But I say that, I always look at, okay, what's the worst part right now? What's the part that, you know, if I don't fix it, you know, it hurts my mobility, or what I can do. So that's what I'm working on now. That's why the knees.
I heard, literally, Scott, 45 years ago, I had a sports medicine manual, and was a line, I've used it quite often in my writing, is injury ages and aging injures.
Yeah.
And you can look at one chronic injury in a person's life. Say they hurt their knee very badly. Guy, very active guy, just go get her, all this. Hurts his knee bad, really. You know, he's talking about knee replacement of years, but he really slams that knee. MCL, ACL, something like that. And you see him, and he's this vibrant, fit man. And you come back a year later where it just took something out of him. And you see him 30 pounds heavier dragging his leg.
Yeah. I haven't gained a whole lot of weight. I mean, I do have 3 sizes of clothes because most of that was from COVID. But I'm back to where my normal size was. And so that's okay. So that I'm not really worried about. But it's just mostly with mobility, because it is, and it's, you know, you got to take the time to do it, right? And it seemed easier when I wasn't working 24/7 on the computer.
Yeah, I mean, I changed from being I was in show business for 30 years. It was extremely physical, long hours, 16, 18 hours, and, you know, 70, 80, 90 hour weeks at times, and very physical work, and very little sleep. And it's not good for the body. It takes its toll. It takes its price. But the difference of moving into writing and sitting at a computer, as you say, and using your brains, which is much better way, be Stephen Hawking and make a living. He does, but it's a much better way to do it. But you have to really, fortify. You have to really almost how I work out. You almost have to become an athlete. And I have a friend up in Eastern Jersey now, and he was one where he'll do a lot of Zoom calls and so forth. And he gets up, I've got half an hour. Or he'll stand on a treadmill and take calls. Or he'll do rounds of like walking around the yard with a headset on, with a backpack with 50 pounds in it, and do push-ups during the call.
You know, Tom, that's great advice, because while I'm listening to you say that, I'm thinking to myself that I've got a Google Home here, and I should actually set that Google Home to remind me every so often to get the F out of my chair and do some rehab. So yeah. I don't, yeah. You know.
Just getting up and down from a chair and using that as a squat. You're limiting your squat by a chair. Doesn't get you below to a deeper range of motion. But putting both feet flat, not using the armrest, pushing through the heels, pushing the floor down and so forth, and standing up properly, just goes a long way towards knee rehab, aside from what you're doing. And practicing that, because when you see people get out of chairs or get off the ground, and it's funny. It was watching someone do a breakdown. Stephen Thompson's a great mixed martial arts fighter, great guy. And he was watching, it was him breaking down martial arts movies on YouTube. So he's watching a Steven Seagal movie, and Steven Seagal's like, you know, 600 pounds now. And there's a fight, and they roll down, and he's getting up. And to get up off the ground, he puts his hand on his knee to stand up, which is pretty funny. And he goes, oh boy, I better start working on that, was his comment. And I thought it was hilarious, but people tend to do that. And I actually did train someone who I was teaching lunging to. And we're doing lunging, and they go down to get a lunge. And I said, well, we'll do three per side, and we'll pause, and we'll do three more per side. We'll do that three times, and we'll build up from there. And when they were getting up, they put their hand on their knee. You can't do that. That's not how it works. And
well, I'm so happy I'm able to do a lunge. I have been able to do a lunge because I put my ACL on my other knee. I tore it in half in 2005. And I've never been able to do a lunge, but because I've been working so much on the rehab, I've discovered that I can actually do a lunge now.
Yeah, which is, like, it is something you lose. And also another thing is, bilaterally, you'll find out you always do it. People tend to do it on one leg. Like, you're going to go down to a lower foot cage, go down with one leg, lower filing kind of one leg. Go to pick up something and fall on the floor, one leg. So we'll do it with the other leg. And it's really awkward, and it's really weak. And that's the difference of training. It's one thing to be active, but you repeat patterns. You find ways of being efficient and making it comfortable for you. But when you exercise, the idea is to be inefficient and present a load and overload to your lungs, to your muscular system, and so forth. Record that, and then try to surpass it a bit the next time. And just like rehab, you get stronger. Once you're done with rehab, what do you have to do? It doesn't stay there. You got to keep it up.
Yeah, it's pretty much your life after a while.
Yeah. Once you hit 30, it's a slow degradation of the system. Some people a little bit later, some people a little earlier. They say in boxing that, like, heavy weights last a little longer, closer to 40. But the lighter weights and so forth, between 27 and 31 is their peak.
Most of the football players I know, their body shot at age 35. I mean, some of them pick up the office.
But nowadays with the football players and hockey players, they're not just the body, the mind. They have such traumatic brain injury.
It's scary. It's so scary. One of my friends, Gary Goulet, he runs a company called StopConcussions.ca. And, he's been part of the research from the beginning. And it's scary. I mean, there is a guy who played in the NHL for the Buffalo Sabres, and he was one of the main stars there years ago, 70s, and he died at age 50. He was a finesse player, so he didn't get hit a lot. He didn't get into fights or anything like that, but they tested his brain after he died, and he had that syndrome. And he wasn't even a hitter, so that's so scary.
It's so individual because, you're seeing it also in soldiers from concussions, from explosions, and like breaching doors and so forth. Breaching doors is real common, particularly in this war. And the concussion going off, but it's interesting, like I know in two cases in boxing, Rocky Graziano lived to like 90. He was losing it around, in his 90s. But I saw him in an interview, a couple weeks ago, like an older talk show, and he's sharp as a whip. And this guy took a beating, and Jack Dempsey, someone out of history, who started his career as a bare-knuckle fighter, must have had hundreds of fights in bare-knuckle, then went into boxing, had a tremendous career. Here's a guy out on the town, and even in his 80s, some two guys tried to mug him, he knocked them out. I mean, it's a very individual thing. It doesn't mean it's not hard on the brain, and they're looking at it. Thank God the studies and the awareness of it is coming out now, because you heard the term punch drunk when I was a kid. Like, oh, I got too many punches. He got punch drunk. And you didn't know what that was. And then you didn't even think of football or soccer or soldiers. Like, almost every adult male I grew up with has tinnitus. They all, oh, yeah, I always got a buzzing in my ears. Really? Yes, when? Well, a couple guns went off over, I was in Tarawa. Oh, okay. Yeah, so now we're aware of it. Thank God.
I want to go ahead and invite a couple people up. Anyone want to pop up? Grab the mic. Nice shade. If you have any questions for Tom, he is the man when it comes to staying fit and healthy. And he's straight to the point. Straight to the point. And I am Brolio. Let me know if you guys want to come up or not. I'd be happy to. And also, Ahmad, let me know if you want to pop up. So, Tom, with all your knowledge and everything you experienced already, and actually, I'm going to invite you up too. You know, do you find, is it, and I noticed, you say you train a lot of women, I mean, men, but I've seen you train women too.
Yeah.
And you did an incredible, I mean, some people I know personally, and you did an incredible job. You literally reshaped how they, their body. I mean.
Yeah. It's like, once again, is, people were very good about, say, banking, or they're very good about designing, or they're very good about communication, or and it's not their job. It's like a surgeon's job to know how to put stents in the heart. Okay, I have no clue. In fact, I asked a trauma surgeon. I said, "You really do a tracheotomy with an ink pen? I just want to know." And he's like, "No, don't do that."
Yeah.
And so it's specialized knowledge, and I don't think the way we're raised and the way it is, I don't think by and large a lot of women understand what goes on when they train. They don't understand what creates an illusion visually of how women could improve their bodies and look appropriate. I've written, in fact, the article I wrote for your page about women, about the shape of the body and so forth, of improving, like, oh, I want to improve my behind. I want a behind like my Zumba teacher. Well, you know, if you had our parents, that'd be a snap, maybe. They don't understand about building the gluteal muscle. They don't understand what it entails. So they'll get a gum band, and I mean a light gum band, move their leg a certain way, and so I feel the burn here. And they're missing great things like squatting and lunging with dumbbells and you know, leg pressing appropriate weights, not, you know, two on the weight stack. It's simply, if women get into weight training more, their bones will last too. There's more osteoporosis in women by far than there is in men, although it does occur in men. But women get the bone density scans, and the two things that are going to help bone density is consuming more protein and resistance training. And if you're not resistance training, you're getting older. That's it. There's no other, no. It's that's the way it works. You need a resistance training.
Yeah, I think, and that's the key.
Some people are born stronger than others. Don't get me wrong. I mean, they're not. Some of the early powerlifters, strongmen, when the first time they went to the gym, it was amazing. But they got more amazing when they trained. And if you started at a very low threshold, you'll have even more to gain. If you've never done it, you have so much more to gain. And you can start at any age. And if you want the real fountain of youth, it's strength training.
That's great. I want to say hi to my good friend Chris. He's in the space. I invited him up, but he's probably is not on his phone. But Chris, today we're just chatting about chatting with the fitness coach and author Tom Furman, and he's a good friend of mine. And I've been trying to schedule this with him for a while, and you know, we have about 10 minutes left. I wanted to open it up if anyone want to chat and ask him some question about fitness. He'd be happy to answer your question. And my good friend Sajad is in the space. Hi, Sajad, how are you? If anyone wants to ask him any questions, go ahead and request a mic. And his new book is called Seasons of Temper. I pinned the link up there. It's an ebook. And I was like, and actually, I was supposed to get that from you and kind of read it. Because, you know, you have a really good following on Medium. I mean, if you look at, like, how many followers, how many people are subscribed to you on Medium? You have a lot.
I get my statistics on reads.
Okay.
And, like, some do better than others. Actually, I got one in today and stuff because I haven't written anything probably in 2 months. Just the book. And I've been pleasantly surprised with the amount of reads I'm getting and so forth and people following me. And I do the work. I spread it around. It's on LinkedIn. And I maxed out on LinkedIn at 30,000 people. And I know each one individually. And Facebook and Twitter and when I can, I put it on Instagram. Although I'm terrible with Instagram. I wish I was this young, beautiful Eastern European model that I'd have like 1.5 million followers. But I'm really bad at Instagram.
Yeah.
Those girls do so well. I just haven't figured it out.
Besides using their images, they have hashtags and different things. And you do pretty well, Tom. I mean, Tom is really good on social media.
So I find my niche. But Medium does well, and I like writing a lot, and I like producing material. I like to keep myself on a regimen of it, not just like stay up all night and write 5 articles and not write for 2 months. I'd rather stay on a regimen of writing and so forth than ideas pop in, I just write them down. And sometimes 2 lines will be an article, and sometimes I have to really do an outline and look down and say, I've got to follow this, I got to follow that. Sometimes I've written down 2 lines at like midnight, wake up the next day and write an article. So that's how that goes. And so far, I'm finding a bit of an audience for it. I'd like to find a bigger audience. But yeah, so far, so good.
So that's your process? It's just you write down whatever comes to your mind, and then you go back and write it at a post about it?
Yeah, literally. I have one. It's not up. I'm working on it, and it's combining an old form of weight training, like circuit training, called peripheral hard action training, and it's combining it with on-the-minute training and slow, long-term based aerobics. And the title sounds like a corny, sappy 80s album. I call it Three Kinds of Love. And I have a picture of David Hasselhoff. And I'm working on that one. We'll see if that ever comes out. I may change it, do it something else completely. But those things pop into my head, write them down, and they become articles. So that's the only magic. It's like someone writing a song, and they're plucking a guitar, and it comes out. They get a gold album, golden record or whatever. It just pops out of my head like that. I just have enough history and things shoot into my head about media, or maybe a line someone says, or a quote someone uses, it'll have a significant impact on me and starts the creative process.
Well, I'm glad you shared that, because my good friend Chris here, social audio guy, he's talking about, I think he was doing 30, I forgot what that platform is called. He was supposed to be doing some type of writing exercise where he writes for 30 days straight. Every day he writes something. So he's going to do that soon. But I'm motivated to a certain point. Maybe I'll live stream. I can live stream every day. I'll be on True Space, but I don't know if I can sit and write. I don't know what it is. It's not my platform. I'm more of a vlogger, as I call myself. So I rather live stream more than. But Tom here has been one of my good friends. Just anyone that's new coming to the space. He's been there next to me when I started Social Chats in 2010, and he's actually been a guest. He's actually brought some guests with me. But Tom, most people think you're an artist because you're always at an art show.
I tend to be associated with artists, and it's funny because one of my friends, an artist, Lawrence Cartel, who's a friend of yours as well, and Lawrence invented digital art. People say, well, he's in the Smithsonian Institute, he invented digital art. And he lives locally, and he posts quite a bit. He's a good user of social media. And he's produced a couple books like me, self-published, and he has a book out now. So he said, can I get a copy of your Amazon book? I said, yeah, I'll order one up for you. And we're going to exchange them, I think, next week and autograph them for one another. Because he put up a post and I said, oh, I can't wait for the next book. And he's like, what's that? And I said, if my underwear could talk, the history of a digital shaman. And he loves that because we're about the same age and we remember all the old stuff together and jokes and things like that. But I tend to be around art a lot because it's kind of very different from what I do. I'm kind of out like, my mind's like the nightclub scene in John Wick. But I like to hang around artists and ballet a lot to kind of take that soft side and mellow me out.
Oh my gosh. I just want to like, oops. So I just screenshot something. Hold on. I just screenshot something. So I before we go, we have about 4 minutes left. Do you mind if I tell everybody how old you are? You mind telling us how old you are, Tom? Because you do what you say you do. And then your profile picture.
Okay. 1957. I'm 64. I'll be 65 in February.
So you got your social security check already?
I got social security. I'll get Medicare at the end of the year. So I love that.
I know, when I show people your profile picture, they're like, no way. I'm like, yeah, way.
You know what the old saying is, you know, all the scars are on the inside? Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, avoid the sun is one trick about aging. And I grew up with this for the first 20 years. Been down here, but I extend a good fortune in sunscreen and avoid, I go out in the sun, but I use a lot of sunscreen. And for those who are saying, well, how do you get your vitamin D? Because everyone asks that. There are even surfers who have low vitamin D levels. So if you're not consuming vitamin D as per your blood test and proper consumption of supplemental vitamin D, that's the way to get the vitamin D. Don't go out there and bake your skin because it just makes you old. You want to get a tan, get a spray tan. There's damage here. I just keep it well hidden.
I love it. We're closing out, but my friend Sam, he's here, and he wanted to ask a question. Hey, Sam, how are you?
I'm good. How are you guys doing?
We're great. Do you have a question for Tom?
Come again?
I'm closing out my space with Tom. We're just here today chatting with Tom Furman. He is a fitness coach and author. And we just finished chatting about his new book. I didn't know if you had a question. You requested the mic.
Like, I don't know, but I just came in. So far, I have not heard yet. I'm still calling. And I should to know a little bit more about him and maybe you experienced something about him, and I didn't follow from
that fight,
so I'm like,
well,
I'll just come back home.
Oh, okay. Well, thank you for popping in. So, yeah, like I said, Tom's 64 years old, and he's a fitness coach, and his thing is he trains people via email and Zoom, so which is and he, I've seen some of his results. It's incredible. He posts these pictures. And like again, Tom, you and I have been like, we've been friends 12, 14 years now.
Yeah.
I've been friends with Tom. I've like all his girlfriends, all his past girlfriends have been my friends.
Yeah. Like it's starting to add up.
Well, the last one the one you have now is awesome. So I think she's making you really happy and I'm happy to see you happy.
She turned 50 this week. Well, she doesn't age.
Well, tell her happy birthday for me. So
yeah. She doesn't age, but I have to keep her kind of private because she doesn't like social media.
Well, she's smart. Social media is not good for you. So Tom would come to my women in communication and you'll see some of our event pictures and there's all these women and there's Tom.
Yeah, the estrogen just overtakes me every time I get home and watch romantic comedies and things.
So Tom, before I let you go, tell our listeners how to get a hold of you. I know I pinned the link for his book, but do you want to give me your website?
Yes, it's Tom, TOMFURMAN, TomFurman.com. My email's there. Shoot me an email. That's how I meet most people, through email. I give free 15-minute phone consultations, and then mainly people want to talk. They have some questions. They look at things. They get a few questions in them, and, you know, they'll say, hey, maybe this is for me, or maybe it's not for me. Or maybe, like, I've got one problem. I go to the gym, but this one thing keeps popping up. Well, we can solve that. And I do that. And my book's available on there. One through Amazon, the rest are ebooks. They're not soft-covered books, but they're ebooks. And download them to your iPads and so forth for reading.
So thank you, everybody, for joining in. I'm going to be doing a lot more. I'm just bringing some of my different friends to do kind of like a chat with them. And I have a lot of friends in this space right now. And if you would like to schedule one with me, I'd love to book one with you. And so we can have a chat and like my Twitter space community. I'm so glad Tom is here. We met on Facebook years ago, and we've been friends since then. And I've been MIA on Facebook. I've been spending all my time on Twitter spaces. And so I've been telling Tom about this wonderful community. And again, I appreciate everybody for popping in and showing your support. And if you would like me to feature you and have a chat with you on my Friday edition, I'm moving it from Follow Friday to more of focus on the person that I met on Twitter Spaces or on any of my social media platform. And I'm planning to do it every Friday at 5 p.m. So again, everybody, have a great day. And DM me if you have any questions. And I appreciate everybody. And everybody, have an awesome day. Let's give Tom 100. Thank you, Tom. I appreciate you. Bye, everybody.
Appreciate you, too.
Bye.
You take care.